Hey everyone, welcome to the second episode of the Plus Three Podcast of Nerdiness. I'm Evan.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're here to bring you the latest news about video games, board games, and anything nerdy. So before we start, I just wanted to say thanks to everyone for listening to the first episode and following us on social media and giving us feedback and everything. We've had a lot of positive feedback and things like that, and we just really appreciate all the love you guys have shown us, and we hope to continue to give you an entertaining podcast. So again, if you enjoy what you're hearing, let us know. If you have some suggestions, let us know, and keep, you know, following on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. We appreciate all that too, and thanks again. We really appreciate it. So let's go ahead and get started. Ryan, what have you been up to the last couple weeks?
The last couple of weeks, I mentioned backing a couple of games on Kickstarter, and I did end up backing The Ancient World. It is a game designed by Ryan Lockett and Red Raven Games. And I am in general a huge fan of his games. Above and Below is one of my favorite work and placement games that I have. And it's, I would say it's a combination of the theme and then the art style. I enjoy his, almost cartoony kind of art style. And then Ancient World, the theme of this game is it's a world terrorized by titans, and each player controls a city-state, and they're trying to attract and unite random wandering tribes of the world that he has created. And the success of that game is having the biggest empire at the end game. And this is actually the second edition, and so he has added more win scenarios, which I'm really kind of curious to see what it is. And then you attract those tribes by defeating the titans and gaining their favor for defending them. And then some of the extras that they have for backing the Kickstarter are metal coins, and I know everybody loves metal coins.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I believe some of the extras are going to include, like wooden meeples instead of like cardboard punch outs, which I'm kind of excited about. There's one more, I believe, there's two currencies in the game. There's obviously coins, for monies, and then there is intelligence, which I think is noted in like the Fall of a Scroll. And that is the last, extra that will be added as far as meeples. And so I'm very excited for this game. I haven't played the first one, but I've watched Dorado runs through, and I'm very excited for where this game goes.
Yeah, then, I'm very excited for you to back this game. I saw it on Kickstarter and instantly texted you and said, "Hey Ryan, back this game." So yeah. I'm pretty pumped about it.
Yeah, me too. And I can't wait until June of 2019 when this game ships. And then also this week or the last couple weeks, I have finally played Keyforge with both of you guys, at separate instances. I have yet to win a game of Keyforge, but I had a ton of fun losing. I enjoyed it very much, and I can kind of see, where you guys had the hype come from. And I very much look forward to when this is released.
Yeah. At the risk of this becoming a Keyforge podcast, I'm really excited for this one. I can't say it enough. I've played a few more games since then, and it's looking pretty good.
Yep.
Yeah. It's awesome. And Ryan, do you have your Switch review ready for today?
I do not have a Switch review ready. Between backing this game and then ended up buying some lumber for a few woodworking projects, and my Switch purchase, got put on the back burner a little bit. So maybe next time I'll have a Switch.
Is that going to be the perpetual joke?
I have a feeling it will.
Great.
All right. Well, thanks, Ryan. Derek, how about you? What have you been up to?
I actually had a pretty busy 2 weeks. I got a lot in. First of all, as predicted, I backed Power Rangers Heroes of the Grid. Yes, I know. I just started looking at it, and I got some encouragement from my wife to just do it, and I went for it. I backed at the Go-Go Power Rangers level, which was the $150 level, so that I could get, you know, the White Ranger expansion and the Green Ranger expansion, because those obviously are my favorite Rangers. And of course, I'm going to have to do the add-on for the custom dice, because if there's one thing I'm about, it's custom dice. I am a sucker for custom dice and metal coins. Those are the two things that I will always buy on a Kickstarter.
Everybody loves metal coins.
Yeah, exactly. So this Kickstarter has, we're down to 3 days to go. They're pushing the last stretch goal, which is a big Goldar miniature, which is pretty neat. 2,500 backers, and they're at $500,000. So it's pretty cool. They just put out a how to paint video, which is pretty exciting, because that's something I've decided I'm going to do, and I'm going to get into, is I'm going to start painting miniatures. My artistic ability isn't really there, but it's something that I really want to do, and I want to put the time in and get better at it. So I'm very excited about this Kickstarter. And I know you guys will probably be excited to play it with me when I get it.
Oh yeah.
And it's pretty fun. So, other than that, I watched and finished, Disenchantment, the new animated series from Matt Groening. And, I liked it. It's getting a lot of negative buzz on the internet, but I think that's kind of the cool thing to do now, is to just hate everything. But I don't know. It's basically, Futurama in a fantasy setting. That's what I would compare it to. And if, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, it's not Futurama. Well, if you had watched the first season of Futurama or the first season of The Simpsons and judged it based on that, I don't think a lot of people would say, oh yeah, that was fantastic. You know, so I'm willing to give it a shot and let it play out for the next couple seasons. I think it's funny. It's witty. Yeah, I think it'll be pretty good. Have you guys watched it at all?
I haven't.
Haven't? Okay.
I also have not.
It's 10 episodes out right now. It's half of the first season. They're 20-minute episodes. It's worth a watch for sure.
Where's it on? What's it on?
It's on Netflix. Netflix. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
I bought Into the Breach on Switch, which is a nice little turn-based strategy game. It was on Steam, and they just released it on Switch last week, and I jumped on it. It's $15. You are playing as these giant mechs who are defending the Earth from these like bug-like, insect-like creatures, big monsters, and it's kind of a puzzler. So it's a turn-based strategy, you know, along the lines of Fire Emblem or Advance Wars, but you're trying to protect cities. So these creatures are attacking not only you, but they're attacking like the cities around and trying to bring down the power grid. And if the power grid goes down, you lose. So you're trying to use your knockbacks and punches and everything to, because you know what the enemies are going to do before they take their turn. They plan out their turn so you can see, okay, it's going to attack to the right and there's a city to the right. But if I can punch it one space, you know, to the south, then it will miss the city on its turn. So it's very puzzly, and you have to think your turns out way in advance. And I'm really liking it.
Cool.
And then, let's see what else. I pre-ordered Mario Party and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate because, as you guys are very aware, Amazon Prime ended their pre-order deal, where if you had an Amazon Prime account, you got 20% off on any game you pre-ordered. And they did away with it, so I had to pre-order a bunch of games right then to get the deals. Did you guys pre-order anything before?
No, I thought about it. I was pretty bummed they were going to end it, but I just decided I would wait, because they still have some other deal where you get like a $10 some credit or something like that. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I can do like
about that. Is it said on select games?
Yeah,
you know, with the $10 off. So we'll see. But it really did feel too good to be true.
Right.
If you pre-order a game, you get 20% off. That, I mean, it felt like a crazy good deal, but it's still disappointing that it's going away.
Yeah, and especially with some of the games coming up, like I'll probably end up getting the special edition or whatever of Let's Go Eevee that comes with the little Pokeball, which is $100, I believe. So if you got that deal with it, it'd be $20 off. That's a pretty significant.
I actually tried to do that, and because it was a bundle with the Pokeball, it was not available for the, okay. the 20% off. Otherwise, I would have bought it.
Yeah.
But that's a bummer. It's ending. Mm-hmm. And then I think finally I did get some board games in. So that was exciting. I went home this weekend and taught my family, Dutch Blitz and King Domino, which are, you know, pretty base level games, which we're going to talk about later in our discussion. But it went over very well. And the problem is always with my family is getting them to the table to learn a new game. Once we start learning it, everything's fine, but it's convincing everybody to sit down and learn a new game. And I'm glad that we at least got, you know, we started out with Dutch Blitz because most people knew how to play that. And then I taught King Domino, which is a pretty simple game to teach. And I think we had a lot of fun. And then last night, my wife and I, played Reef and Century Golem Edition. And I hadn't played either of them. I picked them up at Gen Con and I was very, very pleased with both games. Reef is a great puzzle game. You're stacking these little coral pieces to try to score points in different, arrays. And then Century Golem Edition, if you played Century Spice Road, it's the same thing, but with upgraded components and art. And I highly, highly recommend the Golem. It's kind of a, collect and upgrade game. You're just collecting different gems and upgrading the gems to buy cards that are worth points. And, it's kind of, I would describe it as a better version of Splendor. That's how I would describe it. And I mean, I love Splendor. I played Splendor a million times with my family. But this is, it's just there's a little more thinking to this one, a little more foresight and planning. And, it looks gorgeous on the table. It was really good.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds like you had a good couple of weeks.
I had a very, very full couple. What about you, Evan?
So I've just been, I haven't been doing quite that much. I did get back into Breath of the Wild on Switch quite a bit. I put in quite a few hours on that. So, I don't know, when that first came out, to preface, I guess, I've never been a huge Zelda fan. I've played a lot of them. I think I've only beaten a few of them. But I've always enjoyed it. I just kind of burn out on them, I guess. So the same thing happened with Breath of the Wild. I played it a lot when I first got my Switch and then burnt out a little bit. So now I've just been going back to it and I've really been enjoying it. The open world is really cool. And, I feel like for a while that intimidated me because I just didn't really have any direction in the game. But now I've just been just having fun with that part of it. So, that's been most of my video gaming lately. Although Rocket League did release a pretty big update last week. So I've been getting back into that a little bit. Then as far as board games go, I had a pretty decent board game week or 2 weeks, I guess. I was in Minnesota visiting some family last week, and my brother-in-law is pretty into board games and his wife. So, them and myself and my wife played a few games. We played Azul, which, if you follow our Instagram, saw the picture of my winning board. I was pretty pumped because it's the first time I've ever won.
That's just a great game.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, it's getting all the hype right now, and it's pretty deserved, really. It's a good one for my wife. Doesn't really like board games all that much. She's great and plays them with me. But given the choice, she would probably do something else. But she liked it, so it's a good one for people that aren't, you know, super hardcore gamers. And it's not too hard to teach. It's one of those that maybe looks a little intimidating at first, but when you sit people down and kind of explain it, it clicks pretty quickly. So that was good. That was a lot of fun. I also played some X-Wing, got some second edition in. I'm going to try to keep playing that as much as I can. I love that game. Second edition is great. Again, if you never played X-Wing, there's a second edition coming out that would be a great time to jump in. And I highly recommend it if you have any interest at all in miniatures games. The only other thing I can think of is, I finished the book I was currently reading, which was a book called Doc. It's kind of a historical fiction, but, well, it's based on true events. But anyway, it doesn't really fit into the subject matter of this podcast. But the next book I'm going to start is The Fellowship of the Ring. And I have a slight confession to make here, guys. Don't judge me too hard, but I have never completed the Lord of the Rings trilogy, the books. I've read The Fellowship and I read like half of The Two Towers, and then for whatever reason, I just stopped. So I'm going to go back, I'm going to reread The Fellowship, and then I'm going to read the other ones. And the main motivation for this is that we're going to start the Lord of the Rings RPG soon, and I want to get immersed in the world, I guess. So I'm pretty excited to do that.
Yeah, you'll find no shame from me here. I mean, Lord of the Rings, I mean, Tolkien style is, it's very dry, it's very descriptive. They're not easy reads. It's a tough read, but the payoff is there, and I'm really excited for you to go through that again. It's they're so good. They're just such good books.
Yeah, I would. You'll find no judgment here. I would agree with Derek with the style, but as far as judgment goes, we all know what my Star Wars confession last week was, so I have no room to judge.
I'm very excited too, because Christopher Tolkien just this week released it'll probably be the final Tolkien work that'll ever be released in novel form, and that is The Fall of Gondolin. Mm-hmm. So when that released, I ordered all three of the new Tolkien in hardback, and I just got those this week, so I'm excited to dig into those. But yeah, it's kind of it's crazy. Tolkien's son Christopher is 93 years old, and he's still putting his dad's works together and releasing them, which is pretty cool. But it sounds like this will be the last one. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that's probably it for updates. So, Derek, I think you got quite a bit of news for us here, so let's jump right into that.
Yeah, we got some news this week. First of all, and this is just kind of one of my, you know, my pet projects here. Streets of Rage 4 was announced for the Switch. So 24 years later from Streets of Rage 3 for Sega Genesis, they are going to release Streets of Rage 4 for the Switch. For those of you who don't know, Streets of Rage was a brawler for Sega Genesis back in the 90s. And I spent way too many hours, and I was way too young to be playing Streets of Rage. But it is, it's such a good game, and I can't wait to have it on the Switch and just do some couch co-op. I'm sure there's going to be online play as well, which will be great. I mean, it's a game that is best enjoyed with four players together. So, yeah, I'm pretty pumped about that one. Next, we got some Kickstarter news. Right now, Starcadia Quest is on there from Cool Mini or Not. And, well, I guess CMON, if we want to be proper here. They used to be Cool Mini, now they are CMON. But Starcadia Quest is a sci-fi foray of their Arcadia Quest series, which was a kind of a dungeon crawl without a dungeon master. Everybody's kind of on their own, running around, killing monsters, leveling their crew up, getting loot. And it's all done in a chibi style of minis. The minis look really cool. They're cute, but also pretty cool looking. And so this is Starcadia Quest, so it's all set in sci-fi. You got aliens you're fighting against. You're running around a starship. They've kind of got all the different sci-fi tropes as playable characters. There are, let's see, there's not that much time left. There's only 8 days left to go on this one. They're at $500,000. And it's $80 for the base level and $120 that includes an expansion. So $80 kind of seems to be almost the normal going rate anymore, on Kickstarter. So a little pricey, but you know, if that's your jam, you know, check it out. Starcadia Quest. And that's from CMON. Next, this is kind of an exciting one for Ryan and I. Asmodee has announced a Gloomhaven digital game. So Gloomhaven from Cephalofair Games, great game, campaign style, tactical, moving around a board. They've decided to do a digital version, and it's not going to be a straight translation. It's going to be an adaptation. So they're working with Isaac Childress, who created Gloomhaven, to figure it out. But some of the early screenshots look really good. I mean, it's going to be a straight up video game, I think. You know, it's it looks pretty cool. It's still going to be turn based, moving around a grid. Yeah, it just looks really cool. Ryan, do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I'm kind of excited to see some more details on this when they start, as they release them. I enjoy, obviously, I backed Gloomhaven, after much delay and waiting. It was finally delivered earlier this year, and I'm very excited that I've got it to the table a few times. But I'm kind of excited. I'm sure it won't be a apples to apples port to digital, but I want to be able to play with Evan, and it's hard, obviously, the distance between us to bring that one to table. So I think it would be really fun to be able to play with everyone. And I'm kind of excited to see what comes out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. That's the thing with Gloomhaven. You know, we could get our whole crew in and that's the nice thing too, is the characters can kind of scale. So, you know, if Evan were back for a weekend, he could hop right in at the same level we would be, and we could get that going. So that's kind of cool.
And I think we can achieve that the next time we play, because then I can scale his character by myself.
Perfect. That'll be perfect. All right. So, the next bit of news is Days of Wonder has announced a new game, called River. And, it's from, designers Sebastian Pauchon and Ishmael Perrin. And it looks pretty cool. It is a tile laying and worker placement game. And from Days of Wonder, you know, they don't make bad games. You know, they had, Seven Wonders, Five Tribes, Small World, Ticket to Ride. Like, when Days of Wonder puts out a new game, you have to stop and take note, because they only put out good games. I have not played a bad game from them. So it looks pretty cool. It's got a $40 price tag on it, which is a pretty good price for looking at what you get in the box. I don't know. Evan, are you excited about this one?
Yeah, I am. I'm just looking at some of the pictures and things like that. And it looks like it's got kind of a main board area, which I would assume is where some of the worker placement mechanics take place. And then everybody has a sideboard. And I kind of like games like that, where you're managing your own thing on the side. Tile placement has traditionally been one of my favorite mechanics. So I'm pretty excited for a new tile placement game. I don't know that I've played many worker placements, even though they're kind of there's a huge buzz around them for a while. So I'd like to try to that mechanic and see how much I like it. Maybe we should do that sometime. Maybe that should be one of our goals, is that I'll try a worker placement and I'll report on it.
Yeah, worker placement is one of my favorite style of games, so I'm definitely in for
it. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with what you said about Days of Wonder. They're always fun. You know, it'd be kind of interesting. We're going to talk about this a little more in the discussion, but we were trying to think of a good kind of intro game to worker placement, and I wonder if this would kind of fill that role, because we didn't really come up with any great ones. So it'll be interesting to see how accessible this is to people not as into board games, I guess.
Yeah, and kind of looking at the picture, it looks like you have the center board area for placement, and each person has their own board with a little river running through it. So I'm assuming you're going to be placing tiles along the river that will, you know, you're building your town. You know, and you're using the river to, you know, grow crops and fish and harvest and stuff. So I think it looks pretty neat just from what we're seeing here. We don't know a ton about it yet. It's going to come out in October at Essen Spiel, and then it'll be available for a wide release in November. So pretty quick here coming up. I'll definitely be buying this one.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So, next. There was a Fantasy Flight announced a custom scenario kit for the Lord of the Rings card game. Ryan and I love this game. He bought me a couple scenario packs for Christmas last year. We love the LCG. So what this is essentially they give you a kit that you can build your own scenario. So right now you buy pre-built scenarios and you play the heroes and you play through the scenario. What this is it puts you in the role of Sauron, and you kind of have your pick of what monsters are going to be in there and what obstacles the heroes are going to have to overcome and what their ultimate quest is. And then you can take that deck and you can play against it, or you can hand it off to your friends and they can play against it. I think it's a really cool idea, kind of building your own scenario. You can make it as challenging or as, you know, as light as you would like it to be. And I think it's really cool. Ryan, what do you think about this?
I'm very excited. I think the idea of being able to create your own scenario is awesome, because when we were first playing, it seems like an incredibly difficult game, which I know is kind of the point to Lord of the Rings, that it's just hard. You're a normal everyday person trying to get through a scenario, but it's, I'm very excited to make something as difficult or as easy as possible, depending on what you're kind of in the mood for.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And maybe this will make it so we get this game back to the table more. It's incredibly fun, but it can also be incredibly frustrating when you just feel like you're beating your head against the wall trying to make it through a scenario. So maybe this will be the push we need to get this back to the table.
Yes.
Cool. And finally, Games Workshop has launched what they're calling Warhammer School Club. I think this is a really neat idea. What they're doing is teachers can apply to Games Workshop to be sponsored, essentially, and start their own after-school club for teaching Warhammer 40K. And so Games Workshop, if it's accepted, Games Workshop will send them out a starter set, a how-to-play, lore books, paint brushes, and everything, so that teachers can start an out-of-school group to play Warhammer and to learn Warhammer. I think it's such a cool idea. And, you know, we were talking before we recorded about this, you know, Evan, we thought it would be cool, you know, if they started something like if Wizards started something with D&D for out of school clubs. Like, I know if I had had the opportunity to play Warhammer in school, I would have jumped at it. You know, it's such a cool idea.
Yeah. And it works really well for Warhammer, because obviously the price and everything like that to get involved is pretty high. So it'd be a great way to introduce people to that. But I think you're right about other formats too. I mean, even D&D would be great. You could send the books and, you know, the teacher could be the DM or whatever. I think that would be a really cool way to introduce people to the hobby. And also game publishers could probably do something similar too, where it's just they send a copy of a game, you know.
Yep. And, after school board game club. Yeah. Absolutely. Would be really cool.
So I'll have to keep an eye on this and see what comes of it. It's definitely a good way to get people involved, and just the more we can lower the entry barrier to board games, the better. The more games we're going to get, you know, obviously it's all just the more attention it gets, the better.
Right. And it's a great move from Games Workshop. 5 years ago, the company looked dead in the, they were hemorrhaging money. They had no players. They came under some new management, and since then they've done Age of Sigmar. They've released great product line after great product line, getting people interested in Warhammer and getting people back to Warhammer. And I think this is another great move. It's a way for them to build their player base, you know, because when you're walking through a game store and you see, you know, the Warhammer minis look so cool, but the barrier to entry is so high that it's hard to just take a chance. But if these kids are learning it in school for free, they're much more likely to go out and buy the models afterwards. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, that does it for the news.
Yeah. And I think what we were talking about at the end there is a pretty good segue, because our discussion for today is going to be about gateway games. So we're going to talk about, games that, I guess if we're going to define gateway games, we define it as, we're kind of thinking just games that are easy to learn, the rules that are going to introduce new game concepts or mechanics that you don't see in some of the more classic board games, I guess. So I think a key to gateway games is going to be easy to learn, quick setup, one that's not going to intimidate people when they sit down, which I think to me that's one of the hardest things, is when you start explaining the rules and people get the, you know, the glazed over look in their eyes. And then when you have to say, well, just trust me, when you start playing, you're going to get it. That's kind of tough. But once you can get over that point, I think some of these games are a little bit easier to do that. Do you guys kind of agree with that definition?
Absolutely. The hardest thing is to just get people to sit down and try to learn a game. I ran that this weekend, you know, and once you can get everybody just on board and with an open mind, the gaming comes very easy. And we're going to list off some of the great games that you can use to introduce to your family.
Yeah, I would agree. Once you can get past that initial barrier of getting someone to the table, and as long as you can set it up quickly and go through the rules, I think fairly quickly as well, and it's a light enough subject, I think you can have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. So when you talk about gateway games, I think the conversation almost always has to start with a couple games, and that would be Settlers of Catan or Catan, however you pronounce it. I've always said Catan, so that's what I'm going to do. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. But then, of course,
I'm mad about it.
Yeah, I know. Then the other one is Ticket to Ride. And I think I mentioned in the last episode that for me, Catan was a really big gateway game. When I first played that, I had never played anything like it. You know, with some of the classic games like Monopoly or the Game of Life or whatever, Clue, there's a roll to move mechanic. And I think that's what a lot of people think of when they play a board game. I'm going to roll dice, I'm going to move around the board and then whatever, do some objective. So when you get to Settlers where there's no movement per se, and there, you know, you roll the dice for gathering resources and things like that, it's kind of an eye-opening experience to people. And then, of course, the social interaction of Settlers as well, where you're not just playing your own game, or like in Monopoly, say, the only interaction is if somebody lands on your house or hotel, or a lot of games, you know, there's really not any interaction at all. But with Settlers, you're doing the trading and things like that. It just opens their eyes to what a board game could be. What were your guys' kind of experience with these two games?
I mean, my first ever board game, well, hobby game was Settlers. In college, we had it and we played it 3-4 times a week. We played it constantly. We had bought, you know, the Seafarers expansion, the Cities and Knights expansion. We even bought, you know, it was Settlers of America, which was a whole nother game. I mean, we had it all, and I didn't know any more than that. You know, we played Settlers all the time, and that was it. And then I played Ticket to Ride, and it was incredible. You know, I thought, oh my gosh, what, like this is great. I mean, I enjoy Settlers, but this was a whole different thing, you know, building these railroads and taking these cards and getting the points for the different rails. And I thought it was great. And looking back on it now, I mean, those were great intro games, but there are different games that I would teach now as my gateway games. You know, but anytime I was given the opportunity, I would hop back into Settlers or Ticket to Ride. You know, I still think they're a great way to introduce people to hobby games. What about you, Ryan?
Absolutely. In college, I mean, Settlers was huge on our floor. It was, I think we had 2 or 3 game nights a week of Settlers, and then not too long after that, and I think it was the next year, Ticket to Ride kind of became the big thing as well. And then there was the different versions. I think there's the standard, the United States, and I think there's the Euro, just traveling across Europe, which is also a fun game to enjoy. But I don't know if I would necessarily teach those to anyone if I was going to teach a new game, kind of like Derek touched on just a little bit ago.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you guys. They're great. And Ticket to Ride especially is good for introducing like the set matching mechanic, which you'll see in a lot of other games. So I think it's cool for teaching that, but they are a little bit older, I guess. That's, you know, air quotes. It's all relative, right? But there have been some newer games that have come out that all of us have enjoyed quite a bit that are great, not only gateway games, but still good games to go play. So why don't you guys list a couple of those? Derek, what's your go-to right now?
My number one go-to game is King Domino. You can teach it to literally anyone. I mean, my 10-year-old cousins, my, you know, anybody. It's just great. All you're doing is selecting little domino type tiles that have two different, terrains on them, and you're matching terrains. You can compare it to playing dominoes where you have to match the correct number to the other end of the domino to play on your board. And it's just so simple and elegant, and the scoring mechanics are easy to figure out. You can teach this game in 5 minutes and play it in 15 to 20 minutes. And I think it's short, it's concise. And I mean, there's a reason it won Spiel des Jahres last year. I mean, it's a great game. Another one I like to go to is Potion Explosion. Just because you're pulling marbles from this little crack, and it feels a lot like a Bejeweled or a Candy Crush situation. And that's a great way. Like, my mom loves Candy Crush. So it's a great way to get people into the game with that match three mechanic, you know, where you're pulling marbles to match different colors. And it's a really good way to get people in. What about you, Rye?
Right now, I would say, and I know it might technically fall under the older, newer game category, but Pandemic is one that I have a huge success with getting people to the table with, because it's co-op. So you're not actively competing against someone else. You're trying to save the world, obviously, from pandemic, and save it from disease breaking out. And it, when, as soon as I mentioned co-op instead of, like, you know, for a drastic comparison, like Munchkin, where you're just actively trying to fight somebody, it's a huge selling point. And I've hardly ever met any resistance once you mention it's co-op and you're trying to join
the save. I had to hold back an audible groan when you said the word Munchkin. But yeah. No, I agree with you. It's nice. It's nice with the co-op too, if you're teaching the game, because you can kind of quarterback it. Which, once everybody learns the game, you know, that's something you want to try to stay away from, you know, trying to help people make their moves. But when you're first teaching the game, it's great that you can, you know, you can help them out without actively disrupting, you know, the flow of the game, because that's what it's about. You're all working together for the goal. And so I think that's pretty nice about Pandemic as far as teaching.
Yeah, for sure. I think you guys both bring up really good points. So to address Ryan's first, the idea of a co-op game, I think sometimes just blows people's minds. And even like when I first heard of it, I was already fairly into the hobby. I had played Settlers quite a bit. I had played Dominion and all these other games. But then one of my friends was like, "Hey, I got this new game where you're playing with each other against the board." And I was like, "Well, what? How does that even work?" But I love it as well. And it is definitely one that I know a few people that won't even play other types of games. They just want to play co-op games, and that's fine. I mean, a game's a game. So, and to Derek's point on that, being able to help people along, like, I just love when people, when we're first playing that game, you can just be like, well, let's play with our hands open, or, you know, you just show your cards. Everybody can see your cards, and people really like that concept, because when you're playing other games, there's always this like, okay, I have this card. I have no clue what it does, but I can't really show the person I'm playing against and ask them what it does, because it gives away the game.
Right.
So when you have your cards open like that, it's so much more open and inviting for people. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was something that Derek was kind of hinting at. And that's when he was talking about how King Domino is a lot like traditional dominoes, or Potion Explosion is like Bejeweled. One of my favorite things to do when I'm introducing a gateway game is to make a comparison to something that people would already know. And I think that's just a really good way to get people into it. So one of my favorite ones for that is King of Tokyo. So King of Tokyo uses a Yahtzee mechanic where you're rolling dice, and then you can have, you know, two rerolls, and you keep a few dice, and you're trying to match, make combinations and things like that. So it's the same base mechanic, but it's got this game on top of it where you're trying to put your monster in Tokyo, and you're trying to do damage to the other, either gain victory points and win by being in Tokyo and things like that, or you're doing damage to the other monsters and trying to kill them. But that one's pretty easy too, because you just roll dice. People roll their dice on their turn, and they can, you know, they can make their matches and stuff like that. And everything's kind of open, like the cards that you can gather and stuff, so they can ask you questions that way. So there's not really any secrets there, and they probably know how to play Yahtzee. So it's just building upon that previous knowledge.
Yeah, for sure. Another one I like to teach is Sagrada, which kind of has a Sudoku mechanic to it. When you're placing dice in your board, and you can't have two dice of the same color next to each other. You can't have two numbers of the same next to each other. And it's kind of a little puzzle. And I think it goes over pretty well. It's a pretty easy game to teach, and you can compare it to Sudoku. And yeah, I love that game. So another example of, relating the mechanics to something people know.
Yeah, and I will begrudgingly admit I really like Sagrada. Not that it's a tangent on gateway games, but it was sold to me with stained glass windows, and I immediately lost interest. But it's really fun.
Yeah, the theme. You're like, oh, I'm making a stained glass. Oh, I'm out. This was my first Kickstarter I ever backed was Sagrada, and yeah, it really. Once you actually start playing the game, you're like, oh, this isn't lame. This is pretty awesome. So,
yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So those are some of our suggestions, I guess, for some base gateway games, just for people that, you know, haven't really gotten into some of the more hobby, you know, deeper games or whatever you want to, however you want to define them. I think that once you get people a little interested, there's also, you know, once you get into the deeper world of board games, there's all these new, you hear, I've said it several times this episode, you hear this word mechanic a lot. And mechanic is just, you know, the main mechanism or the main thing that you do or things that you do to accomplish your goals in the game. So for instance, we talked about, King Domino. It's a tile placement mechanic or like a domino mechanic, like Derek said. So, some of the big mechanics that you'll run into repeatedly in board games are things like deck building or drafting or things like that. So we just wanted to talk a little bit about some games that you could do to introduce those mechanics as people get more comfortable with board games. So, Derek, what would you say? I know deck building is a huge, huge, thing right now. You got all kinds of games that use this mechanic where you're drawing cards and building a deck. What would you say is the best way to get somebody into deck building?
Well, I think I have two pretty good examples. Deck building is one of my favorite styles of games. I just love the idea. You're trying to buy different cards from the center and put them into your deck, and you cycle through this deck over and over again. So you're continually trying to add good cards to your deck and make an engine that helps you get better and better and better cards. The first deck builder was called Dominion, and it is very light on theme. The theme is this, you have this town, and so you're buying different buildings, and the theme is very light, but it was the first of its kind, and it blew everything away in the board game world. It was very revolutionary, and it's still a very solid game. Some of my friends, they have, I think he has 6 or 7 different expansions for it, and so he's got an app that will just select which cards you're going to play with that time, you know, because there's so many options. And so Dominion will always be a very good entry point into deck builders. But kind of moving on from that, one of our first deck builders that we played as a group was Marvel Legendary. And that's a great one because it also is co-op. So you have different heroes that are in the center that you're trying to buy. And you're fighting against a big boss from Marvel. It could be Red Skull. It could be Loki. It could be Thanos, you know, and you're trying to defeat the henchmen and also attack the boss. And what's great about that is, it's a deck builder, but like I said, it's also co-op. So you don't feel like you're directly attacking people. You can work together. You know, you can say, well, I'm going to attack Thanos this turn. So you guys take care of the henchmen so we don't get overrun. Marvel Legendary probably still to this day my favorite deck. I love it.
Cool. So another good one is card drafting, which is a little bit different. Ryan, do you have any thoughts on drafting games?
I really like drafting games because they can almost, I mean, sometimes can double as a party game where you don't have to put in a ton of thought. I mean, they're usually a lighter game. Like Sushi Go, I know, is one that we all kind of discussed as a fun one, and it's just kind of fun to pass it around and see the different cartoons and the drawings on the cards and matching and making your sets and just kind of having a good time with a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one for that one. Is definitely a good hybrid, like you said, of party game and drafting, because it's just kind of silly. It's pretty easy to get into. The artwork's great. So I don't actually own that one, but I do really like that one.
I highly recommend it. Sushi Go Party is a great option too. It adds a couple more players and more different types of food that you can score different ways. But I guess I don't know if it was mentioned, but just so we know, drafting would be, you know, you're dealt a hand of cards, you select one card and then pass the rest of your hand to the next person over. And so then you're looking at the next hand from the person, to your right or to your left, and you're picking from that as well. So it's kind of a, you know, you have to make tough decisions about what's going to pay off in the long run. And I really enjoy drafting games. Seven Wonders is another great drafting game too.
Yeah, that's definitely one that, I'd still call it a gateway game. It's a little bit heavier, but not too bad. And it's fun. So that's a good one where if you have one person who is a little more familiar with hobby games that can teach it, it's a pretty easy one for them to teach. So,
Sure.
So the last mechanic that I want to talk about is one that I generally enjoy, and that's area control. So I think going back to comparing this to existing games that people may know, there's some risk elements there. Obviously with Risk, you're trying to take over territories on the world. So one that I really like for this, it's a little different twist than your typical Risk game, is called Small World. So a Small World, the thing that's really cool about this is it's a fantasy setting, and you have the fantasy races like orcs and elves and dwarves and all that stuff. And then you also have attributes or like descriptions of these races, like and there's so the way it's set up is they can mix and match. So one round you might have like wealthy dwarves, and wealthy is a bonus that gives them something, and the dwarves have their own bonus, and you might have like flying halflings or something like that. And then the next round it could be completely different to what those combinations are. And the whole point is you're getting these races and you're trying to take over a map. You're putting tiles down that represent your race, and you're taking over territory on a map, and then you're gathering gold the more territory you take. So you're trying to leverage the power that you get from your race and from your attribute and going against each other. It's a little different from Risk in that there's no, like, there is technically, like fighting for territories, but there's no dice involved. So there's very little dice involved. So there's a lot less luck as far as that goes. There's a little bit more strategy and planning, and it's a pretty fun one just to get the idea, a different twist on area control games.
Yeah. And that goes back to comparing a game to something people already know. Everybody knows Risk. Everybody knows how to play Risk. Most people may not like Risk. This takes away the things that people don't like about Risk. It's less randomness. You know, cause we've all had that thing where, oh, I just have to take out the one guy in Australia, and you roll terribly and it decimates your army. You know, with Small World, it's not about that. If you have the numbers and you have the strategy, you're going to succeed. So yeah, it's a great game. It's an upgrade from Risk, and it's kind of a good game to get people that like Risk into the hobby games.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Any more thoughts on gateway games, guys?
Well, I did just want to mention really quick, one more type, and that's tile placement.
Of course.
Love tile. I know we talked about that with the river tile placement. Carcassonne is the go-to for tile placement games. It's a little bit of an older game, but you are drafting tiles, and placing them to build cities and rivers and, kind of create this whole big map. Everybody's playing off of the same map, but you're placing different meeples down on cities to score points. And, it's just a fantastic game. First time I ever played it, I instantly got on Amazon and ordered because it was just so good. It's a pillar of the gateway game community. It's a really good one.
Yeah. And I actually, the first time I played that was on Tabletop Simulator with Derek, and I did the same thing. As soon as we were done, I got on Amazon and ordered it. And that's one that, my wife would play every once in a while. I think it's a good one definitely for introducing that style of game. And what I think is cool about that one is that even though you're competing against people, you're still working together to build this map, and it's going to be a unique landscape every time you play just based on the tiles that are played and things like that. So it's kind of fun that even though you're competing, you're still building this like world together, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. My wife loves that one too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up gateway games for us. And with that, I think we are about ready to wrap it up here. Any final thoughts from you guys?
No, I think that was a pretty good rundown of game. Just to everybody out there, make sure to follow us on Instagram at +3podcast. We're on Twitter. We've got a Gmail. Send us any tips or questions you have, and we'll try to respond back to it, or anything you want to see included in the podcast. That would be great.
Yeah. And again, we just want to reiterate that we appreciate the support, and we hope you guys are enjoying. Any feedback, let us know. And that is all we have. So we'll hope to do another one here shortly. And until then, we hope you can get some games in, and I'm sure we're going to try to get some in. And we thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.